This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the voice of Toronto sports.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050. Mike Hogan in for Brian Hayes today. Jonas Siegel is here. We've been keeping you company locally for a couple of hours. And one more to go, pal. You having fun so far?
Yeah, there's lots of actually interesting stuff to talk about.
Well, more on the story of the Cleveland Cavaliers as Kyrie Irving says he wants out. At least, that's the report.
The NBA is just like constant on intrigue and drama, which makes it really appealing as like a 12-month-a-year thing.
Is that a good thing? I also should mention that Ned Colletti is going to join us here in a couple of minutes. We're going to talk Major League Baseball. But with the circus that goes on in the NBA, it's wildly entertaining for fans. It's fantastic. But when you look at what is said and done and the way that now you have these super teams, these pockets of star players, is that good for the sport? Because last year, and this happens every once in a while in pro sports, where before the season you go, it's inevitable that these two teams are going to meet. And now with the way basketball is set up and the way the guys are taking pay cuts and still getting an astronomical amount of money to make sure they can go play with some of the other great players in the league, do super teams like Golden State and Cleveland hurt the NBA?
The ratings for the finals were exceptional.
Absolutely, because you wanted to see
it's super a product, team right?
Super
it's
team.
It's entertaining. You just said it. Like, it's a year-round product that's now always full of something to look at, something to talk about. I was looking at this, you know, as far as the NHL is concerned, player movement, star movement, how the NHL really doesn't have that. Like, the NHL doesn't have what the NBA has, where every summer, multiple stars, not like B, C-level stars, multiple, like, A-level stars are trading places. And it makes the NBA fascinating all the time. Whereas in the NHL, players are getting locked up and not moving. Like, Connor McDavid probably won't play anywhere but Edmonton.
Sidney Crosby, Alexander Ovechkin.
They won't go anywhere.
Sure.
Like, the guys that move are rare. It's a PK Subban here. It's like a Marian Hossa. It's like, you know, it's just Shea Weber in the Subban trade. It doesn't happen all that often. I kind of think it might be better just because as a product, it's better. It's more entertaining. It's more intriguing. Imagine, like, if one summer or one year, like, look at what happened with Steven Stamkos when he potentially was going to be an unrestricted free agent. How intriguing that was the whole year. It was probably crap for him and his family and just all the distractions and all that, but it was intriguing for the league. Imagine if that was Crosby. Imagine if, like, Crosby potentially could be available to your team.
But at the same time,
I think it'd be great.
The counter to that is, if you're in a city that's a have, hallelujah in the NBA. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
If you're sitting in Cleveland, where you had, you know, once you had your heart broken when LeBron left, then he comes back, you win a championship, and you're the toast of the town, and it breaks this forever, what, 50 years or whatever, 60 years without a championship in Cleveland. And now he's going to leave again. And Kyrie Irving wants out. Oklahoma City. They come close. They've got a couple of great players. One of them goes, I liked it here, but man, there are four other really good players on this super team, and I want to be a part of it. That's tough on the market where these guys leave. And if you were ever a fan of the Montreal Expos, you can relate.
Well, and that's probably why it will never happen in the NHL where you'll get that kind of system is because the markets wouldn't work. They need to be able to sell PK Subban. They need to be able to sell like their local stars and keep those guys and be able to keep them. Because if they just kept leaving, what would you do? Like those markets just wouldn't. They wouldn't get anyone. It would. I think that's why the.
But it's like that
the
in
model
the NBA, is it not? I mean, if somebody leaves, if you're not in a have, if you're not, you know, the Lakers or
yeah,
whatever,
but you can rebuild like, faster in the NBA than you can in the NHL.
We saw the Clippers have a window.
Yeah.
Where
good window.
A very good window.
Yeah.
It's closed. Guys are starting to leave, right? With the Lakers, if they get LeBron, going to be the more attractive option in Los Angeles again. What does this do to the Clippers? I mean, the guy paid a couple of billion bucks for the team, right?
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden you've got guys just flocking out because, well, it's
well,
Clippers
it
and they might
guy.
Not be able to win.
Well, it's two guys.
Yeah, two pretty big guys.
Yeah, but they still have Blake Griffin. They still have DeAndre Jordan. They're still going to be competitive. I know what you're saying, but like you can be bad and you can get the number one overall pick. Like, it's hard in the NBA, too. I'm not saying that. Sure. I don't think the NBA system is perfect. And even saying that it would be great for the NHL to have star movement, I'm not sure it's ideal. I mean, look in baseball. We don't have... I guess we have a little bit of star movement, but not like the NBA.
And we're maybe going to... I don't know how much star movement we will see in Major League Baseball, but there's some potential as the trade deadline is approaching. Joining us now, the former general manager of the Los Angeles Dodgers, and with MLB on TuneIn, he's an analyst there. Ned Colletti's on the line. Ned, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome, gentlemen. How are you today?
Probably better than some of the general managers working overtime right now trying to figure out what to do with their team. How much fun for the is this time of year for you now because you're not on the inside? Or do you just get those hunger pains wanting to get back at it?
Once in a while, but not often. You know, this is really the coolest time of the year to be a GM, especially the last day and a half. But it's, you know. I just sit and watch now and second-guess everybody.
Beautiful. Take us inside. What at this time of year especially, with all of the research that you've done as an organization, when you get your scouts together and all of your personnel department and you start getting phone calls or making phone calls, how crazy is it for a general manager and his staff at this time of the year?
Well, it's very busy. You got to keep your mind in a lot of different places. Research and preparation to me is paramount. Mm-hmm. And understanding who you deal with is right up there as well. Some guys, you know, are going to bluff you. Some guys are going to come right at you. You know, some guys are going to be kind of honorable with it. Some guys are going to act like they've got seven or eight different suitors and maybe they don't have any. So your preparation, your research to know not only who you're dealing with, but really the players you really want. Make sure that they're healthy. Make sure your scouts see him. Make sure your analytics crew has done all the research they can do, especially if it's a pitcher, to see if the arm slot is changing, if the release point is changing, the velocities or sharpness is changing. And get all your work done and get all your research. And also know your own players in your system. Fortunately, I was about 95% of the time, I was always in a position where I was acquiring major league talent for prospects. So it was incumbent upon me to really know who the guys were that were being asked about. You see them once in a while when you're the GM, you know them, but you don't see them every day like your manager does, if you're hitting a coordinator, your pitching coordinator does, and coaches. Information's king, but you got to keep the ball in the air now, and you've got to have plan A, B, C, and D, because you can't predict what's going to happen. And timing is one of the attributes that is almost always almost always overlooked. But timing is so key whenever you're doing any deal, because somebody may go away and now you got to make a judgment right now, or somebody may push you to do a deal, which is really maybe your second or third choice. But the number one choice and maybe the number two choice isn't quite ready to do it yet. And you got to be able to decide if they're ever going to do it and if you are the number one team when that moment does hit.
Well, Ned, we had Pedro Gomez on from ESPN a little bit earlier, and he was saying that teams now are suddenly more reluctant to trade top prospects for 2 and 3 month rentals. Why do you think that was kind of more okay in previous years, that teams are willing to do that and maybe isn't now?
That's a good question. I think the prospects, it all depends on who the prospect is. I mean, there's a lot of cool prospects out there that really are not going to be bona fide everyday major league players. Mm-hmm. Prospect comes, it's a very easy turn to be laid on people. So I think if you've got a true prospect and you really know this player's makeup, his ability to sacrifice, his ability to adjust, his ability to play in the market you are in, you're going to be reluctant to trade that player for a 2 or 3 month rental. Plus, I think some of the teams that are in that boat, they've got to seriously ask themselves, if we do get in, are we getting in as a wild card? So how much are we going to trade for potentially one game?
Huh. Well, was there ever a prospect you traded away knowing, like, this guy, he's going to be a star, but this is a trade I have to make to try to set my team up?
Well, fortunately, we were pretty good at making sure we only traded those who had a lot of appeal but didn't have quite as much ability and future in the big league, especially in a market like LA, as they had appeal. The one player I did trade that turned out to be a very good player was Carlos Santana, who I traded to Cleveland. But there's a bit of a backstory to that. We were going through an ownership, a different type of ownership, and we were not allowed to take on any money in the 2008 season. I was desperate for Casey Blake. We had no third baseman. We had no shortstop. Pacal was out. Garcia Parra was out. I had to get Casey Blake. And we had a scuttle deal for CC Sabathia just before that with Cleveland, right before CC went to Milwaukee. And so in that deal, I had included Santana. So when I went back to Chris Antonetti and Mark at that time, Mike Shaparo, they were not going to move me Casey Blake, pay all Casey Blake's salary, and not take Carlos Santana back. That was a must. Plus, we saw Carlos as really a very good hitter, but maybe a little bit questionable behind the plate. We couldn't DH him. So it was a little bit easier for us to move. Plus, we had another guy you're very familiar with who was an all-star catcher sitting there ahead of him, Russell Martin.
The trade you made, it was Dodgers and the Red Sox made that gigantic deal, the Gonzalez, Beckett, and Crawford and Punto. Yep. 8 figures go the other way and some prospects. How did that start? Did that start as a little deal that got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger? And at one point did you say, what the hell am I getting into here? This is just getting too big.
Well, it was very historic and very interesting in many ways. We had an ownership change on May 1st, 2012. That deal occurred the last week of August in 2012.
Okay.
And when new ownership came in, they said, look, we know what you've been through. Be bold. Go after guys you really, really like. And we'll worry about the money when we got to figure out the money. But right now, we got to really restart this engine. You had a new TV deal on the horizon. We had maybe the first lack of 3 million in attendance in many, many years. We were kind of scuffling a little bit to get back in the marketplace, in our marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
So I had called Ben Sherrington as early as probably late April, early May on Gonzalez. I'd seen him in San Diego all those years. Mm-hmm. This guy had great power and a tough ballpark to hit home runs out of. And so we really liked Adrian Gonzalez. We had James Loney, whose power had never really developed and whose ability to drive runs in it had started to dissipate a bit. So I had asked Ben about Adrian back then. He said, I can't do that. This is May. If I did that, people are going to think we're throwing in the towel. I said, I'm just here to plant a seed. I know you can't do it today. As the summer wore on, if you remember, the Red Sox were in for a last-place run.
Mm-hmm.
And they had some trouble with Beckett, some trouble with some other players from time to time, clubhouse, beer, chicken, all that stuff.
Yeah.
So there was an owner's meeting. There was an owner's meeting, I think, in early August. And I had stayed in touch with Ben a little bit on Gonzalez. He had tried to move me Beckett at the deadline. I wasn't interested at that point in time. And as ownership got together, they went and they started to talk about the possibilities of this deal. And ownership has got a much wider range of knowledge than I do or any GM has as to where they were at potentially with a TV deal, where they were at with the marketplace. And so they came back from those owners' meetings and they said, we're willing to take on a lot more salary. If you really want Adrian Gonzalez, we're willing to take on a lot more salary, and we'll figure it out as we go along because we have a chance. We have a TV deal that's coming to the crossroads. We think that we can make up the difference and then some if we do a deal that you really like to get Adrian Gonzalez here. And so Ben called me, or I called Ben, and we started to put it together. We decided on the players. We knew what the money was. It was actually... And this sounds like, you know, taking a thimble full of sand off the beach and saying you've cleared the sand off the beach. You know, Boston actually took back $12 million. It was really $262. We paid $250. But ownership was all behind it, encouraged it, kind of pushed me a little bit to do it because I've been in a game a long time. I knew how different this deal was compared to anything else that ever transpired. And they said, look, we're confident in our TV deal. We're confident in your ability to judge talent, especially Adrian Gonzalez in this case. So we got to do this. So we did it.
Well, wow. So what's running through your mind after it's completed? Like, what are you thinking?
I'm thinking, wow, that was a lot of money.
Did you have buyer's remorse, like somebody who buys a house and then goes, what the hell did I just get into?
You know what? It turned out that the players we sent there, none of them really panned out for Boston.
At the
Ruby
time,
De La Rosa ends up in Arizona. Alan Webster's pitching in Europe or in Asia. Those were the top two guys. Gonzo drove in 100 runs 3, 4, 5 years for us.
Yeah.
Carl Crawford played as much as his body would allow. He was all right. Beckett pitched okay for us for a year and a half. We had Nick Punto, who joined us for the rest of that season. And then that other one, he was a key guy for us. Could play everywhere. Good teammate. No, we were actually happy with the deal. And then the TV deal comes up. And suddenly when we make that trade, see, this is what gets lost sometimes when you just look at stuff on paper. Our attendance skyrocketed. The interest in the club skyrocketed. And also the TV money skyrocketed to the $8.35 billion deal that the Dodgers signed with, at that point in time, Warner. Mm-hmm. Frank McCourt, a year earlier, had a $3 billion deal for the same time frame, for the same tenure of years. So the three went to 8.35. Is that all due to the Boston trade? No, of course not. But did it tell our marketplace, did it tell our fan base, this ownership is serious, they're in it, they're in it to win it, they mean it? No doubt about it.
That's awesome.
Well, Ned, you mentioned off the top kind of knowing your trading partners and knowing who you're dealing with. You mentioned Mark Shapiro. We're really trying to get a sense in Toronto what direction the Jays are going to go here. What do you know about Shapiro as a trader, as a, you know, kind of a guy pulling the strings? What can you tell us about your dealings with him?
Well, he was is obviously a very, very bright man. I mean, I love Mark. He's somebody that we had great conversations, whether it was business or whether it was social. Somebody I have a lot of respect for. I've known his dad forever. One of the best agents I've ever dealt with. One of the most honorable people I've ever been around in that part of the industry. I think Mark is going to be straightforward with everybody he deals with. I think that considering the standing of the club and the rest of the teams in the division, I think it's a kind of a, and I'm just taking a guess here. I think it's kind of a tough spot to be in, or not maybe a tough spot, but I mean, it's a spot that you could probably go either way. I think that in that spot, I would be reluctant to give away a prospect, a true prospect for a rental. Then I think that if you were going to really get a player that was going to help your club in 2018 and perhaps beyond, then maybe you look at it. To do something in a short window might be a little tougher for me to do, considering how tight that division is, where everybody's at in the standings today.
Ned, I hope everybody enjoyed the story about that trade as much as I did. That was fascinating. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, you're welcome, guys. You're welcome. Always a pleasure.
That's Ned Coletti, former Dodgers GM, and now an MLB analyst on TuneIn. And, man, that's, can you imagine, you phone a guy about a player. Hey, Adrian Gonzalez, we like him. We liked him in, we think he can help us. We liked him in San Diego. We saw him all the time. What'll it take? And then all of a sudden they have the problem. I'd completely forgotten about that chicken in the clubhouse story and all that stuff. And all of a sudden it's Josh Beckett, and it's Carl Crawford, and it's Nick Punto. And it's $11 or $12 million going the other way. Like, at what point do you not think this is starting to get out of control a little bit? Or, you know, wow, I can't believe they're giving us all of this talent and it's only money, because none of the prospects we're giving away, we don't think are going to make it, and none of them did.
Well, and Adrian Gonzalez at that point had just gone to Boston that long before.
Mm-hmm.
I just would wonder, like, what it would be like trading a star and trading someone who is like a fixture of a market. And like it kind of made me think of, you know, how it would be to trade Josh Donaldson. Like, how do you start that? What are you looking for?
And that's why I went there. How long did this take? And he said those initial calls started in May, late May, and then they consummate the deal. With Donaldson, and I know in Toronto that's the big one right now. If they move, you know, Marco Estrada, I don't think anybody cares at this stage.
Well, you're just not getting back.
Well, no, you're not going to get anything for him, and he hasn't pitched all that well. And I think most people have, are resigned to the fact that the Jays aren't going to the postseason this year. I think most people accept that at this stage. Not everybody. They're still saying it's why, you know, it's open because nobody else in the American League is any good.
And it is.
But there are still so many teams to pass, and to get to even, you know, 85 wins, that have to play over 600 ball, I think, is the way that it works. And that's not going to happen with this team. And if you get rid of Estrada, there goes another one of your starting pitchers. And if you get rid of another guy, or if you shut down Sanchez, all of a sudden now you're down two guys. And Liriano, you're still wheeling out every fifth day, and he sucks. So, I mean, you're not going to have the pitching to compete with some of the other teams that are there. You know, Baltimore's going through the same thing. They can hit with the best of them when they're on. They just can't get anybody out. And in this game, you have to be able to pitch or you're not going to be able to win, period.
But that's why the Estradas, the Batistas, that's easy.
I agree 100%.
If you want to trade those guys, that's fine. Like, that's not... changing your world, and that's not the, the hardest decision.
And that's why I don't...
It's the harder stuff with, like, Donaldson, where you're signaling a clear change in direction.
To me, it's easy to say no with Stroman. It's easy to say no.
I don't think it
with Sanchez. You'd move Stroman. Why? He's under control.
I'd move anybody.
He's a young
for
pitcher.
The right.
Yeah, but
return.
Okay,
if
so
if you
think
you're going to be good for a while, like why wouldn't you consider it?
But these guys aren't old. It's not like you're dealing a guy who's 31. This to me is the core of this baseball team going forward.
Pitchers are a volatile thing.
I agree 100%. I understand that. But if you deal Stroman, the first thing you have to do is go out and get Stroman.
But you're not going to be good now anyway. What do you care?
I still think with the contract, and if you get guys in here who like the city, and Stroman seems to like it here, Sanchez seems to like it here, and we hope that Sanchez gets over this blister
problem. Sanchez is going to need to be paid pretty soon, too.
Understood, and he's going to deserve it, because he's the best player on the roster, in my estimation.
Sure.
You build around these guys. If you get rid of these guys, where are you going to suddenly get these good young arms, and is there anything in the organization right now that even if all things work out perfectly are going to be as good as these two?
But it's timeless, right? It's not...
Understood. And the other thing is with this city in which we are sitting right now, it's happened with the Raptors for a long time. It's happened with the Blue Jays for a long time. It's tough to get free agents to come here.
Mm-hmm.
And if the Blue Jays give any indication that they are going to rebuild, you're not going to be able to plug the hole with free agency unless you overspend. Look at the deal they had to make however many years ago with Carlos Delgado. Everybody said to a man, that's a horrible contract. But if they had let Carlos Delgado walk, this could have turned into the Montreal Expos. Right, where all of a sudden you're looking at, we developed this great star player, oh, we can't afford him because we're Toronto, and he walks away and you go, this is just a farm team.
But what are you trying to do? Are you just trying to stay competitive, or are you trying to win a World Series?
I'm trying to win a World Series, and I think in this instance, and in any instance, you can't win a World Series without great pitching.
I understand that, but there's a timeline. So if you don't think you're going to win within those guys' prime, mm-hmm. which is the next few years...
I think that
you can maximize your return now.
I think that if you
build for a longer term future, like what's the point of winning 75 games and having both those guys if you can get prospects potentially that help you?
Because if you think that you can be competitive in pick a year, 3 years, those guys are still around as some of the stars, potential stars
maybe,
that you have coming up. And I know everybody's looking at Bichette and everybody's looking at Guerrero and saying these guys can come in X number of years and really be help us be competitive, us being the Blue Jays. Help the Blue Jays be competitive. And that is a potential. And if you're Sanchez, if you're Stroman, if you're still in the prime of your career, you see what's happening here, you have these young players coming up, and then maybe it makes it a little bit easier to go out and grab a free agent and say, look, come in and be a part of this. We have this great young team. We've got these great young pitchers. We've got these great young players. Come in and be a part of this. We really need some veteran presence in here. And maybe that's a big part of the sales pitch.
But maybe trading those guys gets you back a return of prospects that gives
maybe.
You more.
And maybe
and look like we've seen with the Maple Leafs. Like, you don't just need one or two. Like,
but
you need a lot.
I understand, but I don't think you can win with just kids. And you're going to need a veteran presence. And those guys will be veterans, solid veterans by that time.
I don't think you worry about that now.
Oh, no, but I'm just saying, I don't know why, unless you get a hell of a return.
But that's why you look. Like, that's why you ask.
Oh, sure, ask. But at the same time, you better be sure that what you get back for these guys is going to pan out. And how many times have we seen good young player dealt for five prospects and none of the prospects pan out? That happens in baseball probably more than any other sport because of the age of the kids and the developmental stage that these players are being dealt. So it's in baseball more than any other sport. I think it's a very dangerous game to play. I would rather have the bird in the hand than the five prospects in the bush.
But you also have to look at what you have and the value of what mm-hmm. you can trade. Those are your most valuable assets.
I agree. So deal Donaldson first and see what you get.
Sure.
We've got to fly. When we come back, we'll get into this at some point a little bit later on. We've got future headlines on the way as well. Right now, we'll scoot away and come right back to Overdrive here on TSN 1050.
I think his dad will invariably settle down once his son is drafted and a team has the appropriate discussions with him.
Or...
Big Baller Brand in the house! Not only is he the face of the Big Baller Brand, but the face of the Lakers!
Or
Josh Donaldson with a two-run home run here in the top of the first.
Or
we'll get there. We'll get on a roll. You know, it's just maybe if anything, it'll shut you guys up, you know.
Overdrive. Future headlines.
6:31, Mike Hogan in for Brian Hayes and Jonah Siegel here until 7 o'clock here on TSN 1050. Let's see, I've not done this before, so I'm actually kind of pumped up. Because I always play along when you're driving around in the car, right? Okay. Future headlines on Overdrive brought to you by 2-for-1 Pizza's new Chorizo Supreme Pizza, with chorizo and jalapenos and mushrooms and tomatoes and onions. Order online, 2for1pizza.com, and tweet at Overdrive1050 or text 105050 with your most outrageous future headline. Every Friday, we'll draw a name, and somebody's going to win pizza. Or we'll select one of these future headlines. And we have a winner here. We're going to do it at the end, though. So we'll do some of the other future headlines, and somebody is going to win that lovely little prize. Let's see. I'm excited today. This is for a shark geek. This is the Super Bowl and Christmas, and everything is all rolled up into one because it's Shark Week. And yesterday, Zaya Tong, Dan Riskin from Discovery joined me in studio here on TSN 1050, and I was over the moon talking about sharks. Our family is just crazy. It's weird. I know. But everybody seems to get into Shark Week, whether you're into it or not.
I wish I was more into it. Mm-hmm. You know those things like you want to be a part of, but you're not really?
Yeah.
I just don't have the patience sometimes to watch. I don't know why.
We did a vacation a couple of years ago. We went down to Chatham, Massachusetts, which is sort of the southeast tip of Cape Cod, because there were a ton of great whites in the area. And we were just hoping, you know, by kind of sitting on the beach or looking out, because there's this giant sand spit out, I don't know, a couple of hundred yards off from the mainland, filled with seals. It's like a smorgasbord for sharks. And that's... Last year, they had tagged or sighted over 100 great whites in the area. That's awesome. And this week, to kick off Shark Week on Discovery, Michael Phelps is going to race a great white shark.
How do you think that was proposed to him?
How fast can you swim?
So we have this idea.
Okay. Well, he can swim. We know that. So here's the future headline number one. Michael Phelps makes the great white shark look like Ryan Lochte and triumphs in Shark Week. Or the great white shark proves that Michael Phelps is no match for one of the ocean's great predators.
I'm going to take the shark.
I'm going to bet on the shark.
Michael Phelps is pretty good. Wasn't there something where a guy raced a cheetah or something like that?
Mm-hmm. I think Ben Johnson raced a horse once.
Maybe that's what
I'm thinking. Gave him a head start because obviously the horse is faster than a human being.
Yeah, cheetah wouldn't make sense.
Yeah, so they gave... I'm just interested
how they
do this.
Did the horse win or did Ben Johnson win?
I think the horse won.
Yeah,
I can't remember. Honestly, I can't remember. I think the horse won.
I don't think I'd want to be a part of this I was him.
Yeah, I just, you know, we talked about it yesterday. They're not in the water at the same time. Like, it's not, they're dangling Michael Phelps in front of the shark.
So they just time them?
I'm not sure how it works. But I talked to the folks from Discovery yesterday. They're really intrigued by this. So I can't wait to see how they do this.
How do they get the shark to go where they, I guess they put bait?
Again, I don't know.
Oh.
This is what we will find out Sunday night as Shark Week starts on Discovery. Let's see. Number two, the Blue Jays sweep the Indians and reestablish themselves as wild card contenders, forcing the front office to keep everyone at the deadline or... Cleveland beats up on the Blue Jays, causing Shapiro and Atkins to start selling off on Monday.
Well, since you can only pick one, I will pick the latter.
Just why?
Because you look at the Jays right now, and yes, things aren't great.
Real, they're not great.
And I just don't know what's going to change that immediately.
Are you still
Aaron Sanchez is now probably going on the DL. Yeah. Josh Donaldson is still seemingly banged up and not himself. Jose Bautista's not hit well since the start of June. Marco Estrada's going tonight. He's not pitched well for a while now. Like, I just
Lariano's
don't know what
is terrible.
So I just don't know what's going to turn this around. So I would propose that they'll, in this scenario, get beat up on and sell.
I would. I don't know if they'll get beat up on. I'm still selling. Well, if they win two out of the three on the weekend, I'm still selling. Just it makes more sense at this stage. The Cavaliers grant Kyrie Irving's request for a trade, presenting a massive change in the East power rankings. Or Kyrie stays, creating even more dysfunction within the Cavs locker room.
That's a really hard one. I kind of think... I don't even know. If I had to guess, I think he probably stays. I just don't know. Like, I think
you're not dealing. If you're dealing them now, you're not dealing from a position of strength.
Yeah, and so why am I dealing them?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, they're like we've talked about. They're in position to go to the NBA Finals
this year.
This year, like, no problems.
And when,
like,
LeBron leaves, not this year.
So you're going to trade Kyrie, who's like your piece for post LeBron.
Mm-hmm.
What are you getting back?
I'm not moving him because this is a 1 year window for the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yeah, and I deal with it.
Absolutely. Let's see. And here's our winner today. Willie has tweeted in with our future headline. OJ breaks his parole rules and ends up back in the slammer, or OJ quietly enjoys his freedom and doesn't end up back in the news.
Okay, I told you before, I do not really care that much about,
but still,
cracking OJ, but
he's a big enough figure. You know the story. You know the history.
He's 70 years old, isn't he?
He's 70 years old.
I'm going to say he quietly enjoys his freedom and we don't hear from him again.
I hope you're right. I hope he lives
What's
in
he gonna
anonymity.
What's he going to do at 70?
He's going to golf every day. That's
right.
What he's going to do.
So is he
going
to get in trouble golfing?
And he's going to hang out with his family, hopefully. Or that temptation is there. You've had a guy who has lived in the spotlight and loved the spotlight. And there are going to be temptations. OJ, can you come out and sponsor this? OJ, can you come out? He had sponsorship, you know, opportunities to go into nightclubs in Miami and do that kind of thing and get people out there. And he did. He loves the spotlight. He's missed it for 9 years. I bet he gets back into the spotlight. Whether or not he commits another crime is another question.
Slammer.
Yeah, I don't know if he goes to... I kind of hope he goes to the slammer, but, you know, I have very little sympathy for somebody who kills his ex-wife and her friend. Call me crazy. Future headlines. So congratulations to Willie. Willie has picked up some free pizza. That is awesome, from 241 Pizza. So congratulations. We talked as one of the future headlines about Kyrie Irving and his request for a trade. Brian Windhorst is from ESPN, one of the guys behind that. And he talked about on PTI today about Kyrie not being the guy.
Back in 2014, Kyrie Irving signed a 5-year contract extension with the Cavs, not knowing LeBron James was going to play for them. He was completely in the dark about that. He thought he was signing up for 5 years of a team being built through the point guard. David Griffin had just been named general manager, and he sold him on building a team in Cleveland like he had in Phoenix all the years he was there, where they built around Steve Nash. And that's what Kyrie Irving thought he was signing up for. And all of these guys who are on this Cavs roster, Kevin Love, J.R. Smith, Tristan Thompson, down the line, all of those guys have signed contracts thinking, I want to be with LeBron. But Kyrie is still on that contract that he signed thinking that he was going to be the leader, the franchise player. And he has talked about this. He talked about this as recently as the finals 1 month ago, how it was difficult for him to balance wanting to be the central player and playing with an all-time great player. And it appears that, at least at this moment, and anybody can change their mind, but at least at this moment, he's decided he wants to do that elsewhere without LeBron.
Brian Windhorst on PTI today, a show you see on TSN nightly.
Well, and you hear that, and that's why people in Cleveland are, according to Emmett Golden from ESPN, are just furious at Kyrie Irving, because that does not make him sound good. Because, like, you look at the Cavaliers before LeBron, they had 21 wins, 24 wins, 33 wins. It's hard to get into Kyrie Irving's mind space where you were the main guy on those teams, fine, but you were terrible and you weren't in the playoffs and you weren't competing for championships. You weren't winning championships. There's got to be more to this. Like, I can't imagine it's just this. He wants to be the star. He doesn't want to play with LeBron. Like, I just can't imagine an athlete wanting that situation to disappear.
But if you are easily the best player at a position, right? If you are by far the number one point guard in the NBA, or even by far the number one point guard in the East, and I don't...
Which
he's not. Because, you know, it might be Isaiah Thomas, it might be Kyle Lowry, it might be John Wall. There are a number of guys to choose from in the NBA East, all of whom are very entertaining to watch. Kyrie Irving is one of those guys. I don't know if he's the best. I don't know if he's fourth best. He's somewhere on that list. And I've always liked him. I love the Uncle Drew stuff. He seems to have that good personality, right? I don't know why you wouldn't wait a year. Because it seems inevitable that LeBron is leaving one way or the other. He might not. He might just say, I don't like what's going on with the Lakers right now. I know there are a lot of opportunities there in L.A. I can do that post-basketball. I'm going to stay in Cleveland. I don't know if that ever works out or not, but it's a possibility, at least. But if LeBron does leave, they are going to need a big fish in a relatively small pond. And that could be Kyrie Irving. And maybe that's what he wants to be, because he hasn't just talked about the major markets. There are, you know, he's been linked to Chicago in one story. He's been linked to Minneapolis and San Antonio in one story, which are not big markets. New York is sort of the outlier. It's the big market that he has put on his list. He just wants to play. He wants to be the guy. Maybe he's more comfortable in that role. Look, I know the ball on every offensive.
But hang on. That doesn't make sense. In some of the rumored destinations, he would not be the guy.
No,
like, his preferred destination, according to the ESPN story, is San Antonio.
He's not the guy there.
He's not the guy. Kawhi is going to be the guy.
Sure.
You're going to be number two.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to go to Minnesota, which is another one of the destinations that
you're
was
number,
supposedly
at least
listing,
number two.
Yeah, you're probably number three. You're probably behind Jimmy Butler and Karl Anthony Towns. So something about this doesn't feel right, doesn't seem right. You guessed earlier in the show that this was leaked from
the
team side of things.
Mm-hmm.
Based on how this frames Kyrie Irving, that seems like it makes sense.
Yeah, because there's no way in this situation the athlete can win when it comes out that the athlete has demanded a trade.
Right, but this kills their bargaining position if it comes out. Because now, if I'm a team and I'm interested in Kyrie Irving, I know you need to trade him.
But we've talked about this often, about the Cavaliers front office. A lot of guys like the owner for what he does, and he seems to be a guy that gives back to the community, and he's very hands-on with the Cavs. And there are some people who hate him because he's hands-on with the Cavs. Bit of a loose cannon element there, right? So I don't know what the relationship is between Irving, his agent, and the general manager. I think that
they don't have a general manager.
Now, it looks
that's
like
part of like this crazy situation.
But Kobe Altman's going to be named soon, right?
Yeah.
It sounds like that's going to be the guy. Maybe he can come in and smooth things over. I just don't know why, if you're the athlete, when you know that there's going to be another GM, why you would do this before the new GM is there. You can go to him quietly, or you can at least see if things can be smoothed over with the new management group. Unless Kyrie Irving just has a big enough ego, or he wants to be the guy, he wants to be the guy now.
But this all gets back to Dan Gilbert and the decision not to bring back David Griffin as their GM.
Yeah.
Like, it just creates chaos in your front office.
Yeah.
I think they did that like a day or two before the draft.
Yeah.
Like, you're just right before, forget about the draft, like right before the offseason, where you are a championship contender and you're putting your team in this position where you don't have a GM.
Yeah.
You just kind of open the doors for all this chaos. Now you have this, and now you hand this to a new GM to kind of handle, and I just don't know how you go about it.
This is going to be an interesting offseason in Cleveland now from henceforth, and I can't wait to see the introductory news conference when Altman comes in and takes over, because you know he's going to be asked about that at least once.
Well, and the problem is, if you do this, you still have to find a trade that makes you, if not as good, close to as good.
And now, because this is like, it's immediate,
so it's
player for immediate player, and yikes, good luck doing that. When we come back, best bets, among other things, as we continue with Overdrive. Hogan in for Hayes, that's Jonas Siegel. This is TSN 1050. .6:49, creeping up on 7 o'clock. This is Overdrive on TSN 1050. Mike Hogan in for Brian Hayes. That's Jonas Siegel. We're in for the next, few minutes, keeping you company. First up, though, before we get back into some Blue Jays banter, it is time now for today's best bets, brought to you by ProLine. You tell me how I do on this, okay? Tonight we've got three games, two baseball, one football. We will start in Major League Baseball, game number 7, Houston at Baltimore. Listen to the matchup. It's Mike Fiers against Ubaldo Jimenez. Not good. I saw your reaction. Not good. This looks like a gimme. Take Houston on the road by the plus, the visitor plus. That would pay 185. CFL tonight. BC comes east. They win three games. They look spectacular. They go home tonight. Their home opener against Winnipeg. BC favored by 4. tonight, and that would pay 160. And I will take BC. I'm not going to go big because there have been too many close games in the CFL this year.
Okay.
So we'll go with that. We'll take BC by 4. That pays 160, as mentioned. And Chris Sale tonight. Never bet against Chris Sale. Rule number one. They take on Anaheim. Not a great offensive team, although Trout has been pretty good of late. I'm still going to go with Boston on the road with the plus. That would pay not much, 145. But a $20 bet, if all three come through, pay 85.80.
That seems like a pretty good bet.
It seems like an okay bet.
If your CFL prediction is right, which
okay.
I don't know.
Which, yeah, I understand that. You can find the picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio. And you can get way into the game with ProLine. It's a sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. Before you wager, get the latest odds, event info, and matchup stats on your phone. ProLine, get way into the game. We've been talking baseball, mostly about the Blue Jays, because I think most people are in agreement that if there's a window, it's small and it's closing. Many think it's shut, and there are still those that think it's still wide open because of the uncertainty of any other team in the American League.
It just feels like too many things have to happen for them to
Agreed.
Get on a run.
And they haven't
and
really,
none of them seem that likely.
And they haven't proven this year that they can pull off anything in terms of what they have to be able to pull off.
Right, like look at certain elements. Like the bullpen's been great, so let's assume that stays
sure.
fine.
Starting pitching has sucked. Is it going to get better?
So what's going to get better about the starting pitching? Is Marco Estrada going to find himself again?
No.
I don't know what evidence there is to suggest he will. Aaron Sanchez is probably going to the DL with
yep.
the blister issue, so that's not good.
No.
Jay Happ's been fine.
Yep.
Marcus Stroman's been good.
Yep.
Francisco Liriano has not.
He's a tire fire.
I don't know what's changing there.
Yeah.
Offensively, they've been one of the worst offensive teams in the league, which mm-hmm. is a surprise. What's going to turn around there? Okay, Josh Donaldson could start to hit. That mm-hmm. seems like it's possible. Beyond that, Jose Bautista, maybe he gets a little hot at some point. Maybe they trade for a second baseman with some pop.
But what are you going to give up? Seriously.
And that's the question, and maybe you shouldn't give up anything.
Ding.
And so beyond that, so what's going to change offensively? Is Troy Tulowitzki going to start hitting? Doesn't look like it.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know where the answers are to suggest that this is going to turn around.
But Gibbons today was saying they're not going to be trading the core players. This audio courtesy of Power Alley with Mike Farron, Jim Bowden, and Jim Duquette on SiriusXM's MLB Network Radio.
You know, it hasn't been a good year for us. It's not over yet, but you know, there's a ton of talent on this team. We want to be strong for next year and finish this year strong, and who knows what the hell might happen this year. But you know, he wants to hold it together. Whether somebody throws a huge offer at us that you can't resist, who knows. But I expect the core will stay together. I would think that.
You would think that.
It's just the talent level is better in name now than it is in actual productivity.
Very good way to put it. You hear the name Tulowitzki, you go, oh, if you're outside the market. Then you look at the numbers, you go, oh.
Right, because he's not the Troy Tulowitzki who almost hit 400
mm-hmm.
for like 2 months of the season.
Do you think
he's not that guy.
Do you think they'll do anything imminently after the weekend series?
Yeah, I could see
some Monday something. Or Tuesday, something
I could
happens.
See one of those fringier guys getting traded.
Well, it would give us something to talk about next week. That would be fine. You're off to Boston this weekend. That'll be fun.
I am.
Enjoy. The weather's going to be good?
Yeah.
Perfect. Awesome. Have a great trip.
Thank you.
That's Jonas Siegel. My thanks to everybody for inviting me in. Brian, is Brian back next week or is he back on vacation? He's back next week. That's awesome. Thank you to Molly on the other side of the glass, Tyler Hunt as well. That's going to do it for today's edition of Overdrive. My name is Mike Hogan. Thank you so much for listening to TSN 1050.